BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
Tonight we have a special Shakespearean edition of My Word, and so it's fitting that the program is being recorded before a specially invited audience in the Royal Shakespeare Theatre at Stratford-upon-Avon. And those taking part are Nancy Spain, Dillis Powell, Dennis Norden, and Frank Muir. We go straight into round one, which deals with the meanings of certain words used by Shakespeare, which are not in absolutely general use today. Two marks if you get the meaning right. Beginning with Dillis Powell. Dillis, what's the meaning of tickle brain?
Tickle which?
Tickle brain.
Brain?
Just like that.
Tickle brain. Smart aleck.
No.
Smart aleck.
Have a shot at the play.
Man with an itchy hat.
What was the advice you gave me, Jack?
My advice would be to go to a bar where they kept strong liquor, but I can't give you any marks because tickle brain means strong liquor, and it's Falstaff to Mistress Quickly. Peace, good tickle brain. Dennis Norden, what is or was a leet?
I don't really know. I can only presume that in Macbeth, when the porter hears the knocking on the door, he says, "Wait a minute while I go get a leet."
Dennis, I'm quite sure he did, but it isn't in the first folio. It's no good. It's in the Taming of the Shrew, in the induction, and it means a court of the manor, a court leet. And Sly, who was supposed to be in a trance, says he would present her at the leet for some sort of damages, I suppose. Nancy Spare, what is or was a lifter? A lifter.
A lifter?
It's a kind of medieval brassier.
According to the Bacon Society, Shakespeare was a lifter.
but would it be anything to do with, you know, robbery or something?
Yes, that's getting better.
Well, you know, somebody who lifts something is a thief.
All right, that'll do. Two marks. It's Cressida to Pandarus in Troilus and Cressida, and Pandarus has been praising Troilus and saying he was a better chap than Hector. Back to Frank Muir. What is Wonion? W-A-N-N-I-O-N. Wonion.
Oh, yes, this occurs in several of Shakespeare's plays. It means a prize-winning onion.
I can't remember any play in which that was a subject.
No, it's not a subject. Not written about it, but it's very relevant. It also means a solitary bunion. Bunion. The meaning has been corrupted, no doubt, to the phrase you have on your answer. What have you got?
But if you ask me that, you're settling for no marks. I'm sorry. It means vengeance. And it's in Pericles, the first fisherman, saying, "Look how thou stirrest now. Come away, or I'll fetch thee with a wonion, with a vengeance." Well, before we start round two, I give each team a quotation for them to write down, and I want the two women members of the team to study their quotations, and then at the end, I shall ask where those quotations come from. So, Dillis Powell with Frank Muir, your quotation is, "The quality of mercy is not strained," and Nancy Spain and Dennis Norden, yours is, "Four lagging winters and four wanton springs." And then at the end of the program, I shall ask Frank and Dennis to give me their ideas of how these words came to be written. And I don't want any of those answers yet. So to round two, which is the who or what department, two marks if I get them right. Dillis Powell, who were the Thane of Cawdor and the Thane of Fife?
Well, there were two characters in Macbeth.
Mm. I want a better identification than that.
Really?
There are lots of Thanes.
Thane, if I've had a wife, where is she now?
Yes, yes, but who was he?
Oh, dear.
No, it wasn't me.
Thane of Cawdor was Macbeth in time.
All right, yes, that'll do for half of it. Hmm. Thane of Fife, have a shot at that.
Macduff.
Oh, you've got it at last. Well done. All right, back to Dennis Norden. Two plays of Shakespeare were set mainly in Verona. Which were they?
Well, I'll have sixpence on Two Gentlemen of Verona.
Good enough. That's half the answer. And the other
Romeo
one?
Romeo and Juliet.
Yes. Two Gentlemen of Verona and Romeo and Juliet. 2 marks. All right, back to Nancy Spain. Nancy, what was the name of Shylock's daughter?
Jessica.
All right, fair enough.
Good old Nancy.
It's a good old name.
Stole off with that layabout Lorenzo. 2 marks.
British name.
Frank Muir, the names of King Lear's 3 daughters.
Goneril, Regan,
yes,
and D'Artagnan. Cordelia.
Yes. Fair enough. Goneril, Regan, and Cordelia. Well, the next round's about songs, because there were plenty of them, songs and chants and roundelays, in Shakespeare's plays. For a maximum of 4 marks possible, can you give me the next lines to the ones I quote, together with the name of the play, and if you possibly can, the name of the singer, too? Starting with Dillis Powell. You spotted snakes with double tongue, thorny hedgehogs be not seen.
You think I know that?
Yes.
You do?
I know a bit of it. Because I did this for Junior Oxford.
I thought you did it to go to Sandhurst.
Newts and blind worms, Beano, well, come not near our fairy queen.
That's it.
And it was I was in sacking. I was bottom. And, it was, one of the attendants to, yes, to Queen Titania. And she was lying back on a rather bumpy lump of cardboard. And the fairies sang that to get her to sleep.
What an instructive programme this is.
Isn't it good? Mm. Yes. And Dillis, surprisingly, you get 4 marks. You spotted snakes with double tongue, thorny hedgehogs be not seen, newts and blind worms do no wrong, come not near our fairy queen. Midsummer Night's Dream, as Frank said, one of the fairies lulling Titania to sleep before the arrival of Bottom. Now, Dennis Norden, I am gone, sir, and anon, sir, I'll be with you again.
Is that Twelfth Night?
Yes.
Festa?
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, wait a minute. That's the bit where it's got ha-ha the devil in it, isn't it?
Yes, that's quite right. From, yes, absolutely right.
Well, it's the one that's got ha-ha the devil.
See, you are...
I'm not venturing off safe ground for 1 minute.
Do you remember who he's singing it to, Dennis?
To Malvolio.
That's it.
Wasn't it?
I'm gone, sir, and anon, sir. I'll be with you again in a trice like to the old vice your need to sustain, sung by the clown in Twelfth Night, to Malvolio, who's been put in jug because they think he's mad. 3.5 out of 4. Nancy Spain. The master, the swabber, the boatswain and I, the gunner and his mate.
Oh, yes. The Tempest.
Yes.
The drunken beast reels on and he sings.
Yes,
there was
that's
Mary
all right.
And Mary May and Magdalene and Moll.
I thought it was Don't Bring Lulu.
None of us cared for Kate.
Well, before you bring in any more girlfriends, I'm going to mark you 4.
It's number one on the hit parade in its day.
Master, the swabber, the boatswain, and I, the gunner and his mate, love Maul, Megan, Marion, and Marjorie, but none of us cared for Kate. Quite right, Nancy, that's all right. Sung by Stefano in The Tempest, and he called it, because he was drunk, a scurvy tune to sing at a man's funeral.
Shocking thing, drunkenness.
Now, Frank Muir, yours is perhaps more of a chant or even a dirge than a song, just to help you.
Suitably.
Starts like this. by the pricking of my thumbs.
Someone evil outside comes. Or anyway. This way comes. This is. It's open locks. Whoever knocks, enter Duncan in his socks. If you'll excuse the blasted heath. It's Macbeth,
mm-hmm.
And it's which I know not, but it's one of the three witches.
That's all right. Four marks. I hope it wasn't Duncan, because he's been dead for three acts. By the pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes, open locks, whoever knocks, and then as Frank quite rightly says, enter Macbeth, who then says, how now, you secret black and midnight hags. Act four, Macbeth. Second witch. Well, in the next round, these are things which people have said about Shakespeare, and many people have said many things about Shakespeare and his works. For two marks, I want to know who are responsible for saying or writing these remarks. Beginning with Dennis Powell, if we wish to know the force of human genius, we should read Shakespeare. If we wish to see the insignificance of human learning, we may study his commentators. Unkind to critics.
Not very long ago.
Well, about 120 years, thereabouts.
A trifle, yes. Hazlitt.
Absolutely right. Two marks. Well done, Dillis. Hazlitt's Table Talk, or The Ignorance of the Learned. Now, Dennis Norden, a bit further back. The stream of time, which is continually washing the dissoluble fabrics of other poets, passes without injury by the adamant of Shakespeare.
If you really want to see the insignificance of human learning, everybody had a good word to say for him. It could have been anybody. No.
I tried to put on my fine 18th century voice, Dennis.
Johnson.
I think one and a half. I helped a bit too much there. It's Samuel Johnson's preface to the works of Shakespeare, 1765. Nancy Spain, they were built out of music.
Oh, I know this. It's Oscar Wilde.
Yes,
jolly good.
Do you remember the book?
It must be The Critic is a Liar, or The Liar is a Critic, or The Critic is an Artist. Or
that's it. Oscar Wilde, The Critic is Artist. Well done, Nancy. Too much. come on a bit into the next century, Frank.
Thank you.
Who was it who inferred that if, in fact, Shakespeare's plays were found not to have been written by Shakespeare, he, for one, wouldn't wish to act in them anymore?
L. Oliveri. Lawrence, you should write more clearly. Sir Laurence Olivier said that, yeah?
So it was. Absolutely right. Sir Laurence Olivier. Well, now we come to the last round and go back to those quotations I gave the two teams earlier on in the programme. For two marks, Lillis Powell, I'd like the origin of your quotation. Quality of mercy is not strained.
Merchant of Venice.
Yes.
Portia.
Yes.
Making her trial speech.
Absolutely right, yes. Portia, Act 4 of The Merchant of Venice. Quality of mercy is not strained. It droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven upon the place beneath. It is twice blessed. Now, Nancy Spain, the origin of your quotation, which was four lagging winters and four wanton springs.
I haven't the faintest idea.
That's splendid. I think it's a much harder quotation than Lewis's. All right.
Is it in the sonnets or something?
No, marks. It's a historical play. It's in Richard II. It's Bolingbroke. How long a time lies in one little word, four lagging winters and four wanton springs, end in a word, such is the breath of kings. The King Richard II, showing power, as it were, has taken 4 years off his sentence of banishment. That's the word of the king. Sorry, I can't give you marks. And now I shall ask Frank and Dennis to let me have their explanation of how these quotations came into being, and on this occasion the marks will go to whichever unlikely explanation receives the larger and longer amount of applause from the audience here in the theatre. So back to Frank Muir. The quality of mercy is not strained.
No, it's very true. It's absolutely true, that. Because quite recently, devotees, either or both of the devotees of this program, may have remember that I did a story about my koala bear called Eros. And I made a plaintive appeal for eucalyptus gum leaves to Australia, and I asked for a gum tree fit for Eros to leaf in, you see. And there was sort of 10 seconds paralyzed silence, and the whole thing was very embarrassing. But the people are terribly kind, you know, and a couple of days ago I had a letter from Australia saying I was very touched by your story of Eros and his lack of proper food. So I'm sending him the sort of thing you asked for. And it was signed, Yours Sincerely, Oscar O'Flaherty Wills Murphy, who lived in Griffith, New South Wales. And sure enough, I got a notification from the East India docks in the east end of London saying that a parcel had arrived for me. Mr. Murphy hadn't sent me gum leaves at all. He'd sent me a eucalyptus tree. I signed for it. Admittedly, it was a small one. It was only a sapling. It was only about as thick as my little finger. But it was 42 feet long. It was very nicely packed. The roots had been pruned and had been enclosed in a little tight ball of what the Americans rather nicely call burlap, which we call hessian. I signed for the thing, and this awfully nice storeman said good morning, and I wondered how to get it home, you see, because I live the other side of London. It's about 32 miles away. Then I had an inspiration. There was a pawn shop there, and they had some roller skates in the window. I went in, and I bought 10 pairs of roller skates. And I lashed them to my sapling every 4 feet. Then I took a firm grasp of the hessian bomb and pulled it along. Well, that worked quite well. The whole thing was rather like a very thin snake on roller skates. But it worked, except that I realized it would take me about 2 days to get home. And I realized unless I healed the tree in or planted it and watered it, the thing would die, and my poor koala bear would probably die too. And Mr. Murphy's gift would be wasted. Just then, a Roman Catholic priest came along on a motorized bicycle. So I stopped him, and I arranged with him a plan whereby I took the belt off my trousers, made a slip knot through the buckle, fastened that round the hessian bomb end, then laced that to the saddlebag of the motorized bicycle. Then I discarded 9 pairs of skates, put the other pair of skates on, and I held up the whiskey end, you see, and he pulled me along. Rather like a kind of ground water skiing, I suppose that's what it was. And the priest was took to it very well. He had a rather large crash helmet, and he bent low over the handlebars and revved up, and we sped up along the commercial road, really going at a good lick. We passed Rotherhithe, and we passed Limehouse. You know those cobbles that start just by the commercial road? When you're doing 30 miles an hour, hanging on to the end of a 42-foot sapling, and you strike cobbles, and you're on roller skates, and you've taken the belt off your trousers. The trouble was, I couldn't bend down to pull them up, you see, because I tried, and I wobbled terribly dangerously. And we went right across London, right home. It was a bit nasty, weaving. There's a very nasty right-angle bend, just, if you can follow me, just before you get to Sunbury, there's a factory, Job's. I think they make comforters. You turn sharp right, and that rather bent my sapling a bit. But we got home, and I planted it, and I showed it to my koala, who whimpered with pleasure, gladdened my heart. But in the morning, it was drooped. And I realised what had happened. Going round the corner, either by Job's or going round Piccadilly, I'd sprained its bowl. And you know it's like when you spray in a tree's bowl, it'll droop and die. And I was terribly worried. I didn't know what to do after Mr. Murphy said, excuse me. Terribly het up. So what I did was I ran round to my dentist and got a light van, and I borrowed his portable X-ray machine, and I sellotaped 240 tooth X-ray plates all up the sapling, and I X-rayed the whole thing, and I sent them all off to the Royal College of Tree Surgery at Wood Lane, Shepherd's Bush, and I told them the whole story. It took 9 foolscap sheets. And I said, please, is it going to be all right? And this morning, I thought you'd be glad to know, I got the reply. It was just a simple medical bulletin. But to me, it was a line of poetry, almost a line of Shakespeare's. It just said simply, the koala tree of Murphy is not sprained.
Personally, I'll never drive through London again after that. And now, back to Dennis Norden, and you remember his quotation was, 4 lagging winters and 4 wanton springs.
I'm sorry to have to bring you bad news after that heartwarming story, but it appears that for several generations, the most eminent Shakespearean scholars have been wrong about an episode in Shakespeare's life, and that was to the effect that Shakespeare at one time had been on the verge of being arrested for poaching. Now, this was not the crime with which he was charged. It was simply due to the illegibility of Elizabethan handwriting, and anybody who has visited Stratford will know what that crime is with which he was charged. He was charged with parking. With leaving his horse in the roadway in such a manner as to cause an obstruction. And it was for this reason that he left Anne Hathaway his second best bed. You don't appear to see the connection. Well, I'll have to go into it in more detail. See, the morning after it happened, Shakespeare went to London and arrived at the Mermaid Tavern in High Dudgeon. And he approached his best friend, Ben Jonson, who were always together, those two. They were known as Bill and Ben, actually. And he said, on leaving Mistress Hathaway's cottage this morning, where I did repair myself in order to bid her farewell, I was apprehended and warned of a summons by 2 local constabulary who were lurking nearby in a Z carriage. That is what had happened. The 2 policemen had found him and warned him that if he left his horse there again, he would be summoned. Now, a parking summons in those days was much more serious than now, because for parking, you got put in the stocks, flogged, and then deported. Jonson said, well, what does this mean? He says, it means that whenever I come to London, I cannot leave my horse outside Mistress Hathaway's cottage again. So he said, well, don't bother to. Can't you leave the horse somewhere else? He said, well, leave the horse unattended in Stratford, I should hot chocolate. Because, you see, cocoa didn't come to the country another 100-odd years yet. So Jonson said, well, I'll tell you, the only thing you can do if you want to avoid being deported, put in the stocks, and flogged for parking, when you go into Mistress Hathaway's cottage, you must take the horse in with you. What about the bedroom? Shakespeare said, watch it. He said, why don't you put the horse in the bedroom? And Shakespeare said, but what about the smell? Whereupon Johnson said, for the very first time in recorded history, the horse won't mind. That is what Shakespeare eventually did, and every time he came down to the Mermaid Tavern in London, he left his horse in the bedroom, which is the reason for the whole thing, because obviously you put a horse in a small bedroom, the windows got broken, it got drafty, so the horse sat on the bed springs broke. And that was the reason that Shakespeare left Anne Hathaway, his second best bed, with all the furnishings or bedclothes, as in the quotation you have just heard. For lagging windows and for wanting springs.
Well, for that wildly plausible Shakespearean story, I think by your vote, Dennis Norden just wins. I award the mark to him, and that brings us to a final score in which Nancy Spann and Dennis Norden win by 4.5 marks from Dillis Powell and Frank Muir, and it also brings to an end this special edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Nancy Spann, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Shryan and Edward J. Mason, and presented by the BBC.